Okay, you are tuned to 90.3 WCBC in Newton. Victor Robert Venskis here, and it is now time for Expanding Awareness. And with us online is Patricia Burke, and she is the Mass Coordinator for the Citizens for Safe Technology. And she is the coordinator for the U.S., and they work with protecting from harmful biological interferences, such as the smart meters, and that's what we're going to talk about. Good morning.
Hi, Victor.
Hello. Okay, for those who may not even be familiar at all with what a smart meter is, what is that?
Well, it's being proposed or promoted under the idea of sustainability, but it's a new wireless electric meter, also for gas and water as well, that is installed on every residence. So apartment buildings could have 60 on one wall. And it gives the electricity company kind of a portal into what's going on inside the house 24 hours a day. So instead of having a meter that collects the information about the house for billing purposes and then gets read once a month, these new meters are transmitting. In California, one was measured at 190,000 pulses per day. So it's these microbursts of radiation, perhaps every 2 seconds for a very short period of time. And everywhere that they've been installed, there have been health complaints, which is my primary concern, but there are additional issues regarding the safety, fires, the cost, the hackability. and what's happening really is the utility companies, the model, the baseline generation model, is starting to be challenged by all these other ways that we're able to generate energy locally and transport it shorter distances. And they're getting into the information business, really, the data that they're going to be selling about what people are doing in their homes.
What do you mean, what people are doing in their homes?
Well, they'll know exactly what appliances are in use at any point in time. They can determine the occupancy inside the house. So in the United States, the way in which the smart meters are being installed, it's becoming part of an overall surveillance network, and that data will be stored for quite some time about what is taking place inside a person's home. So it's a real sort of Fourth Amendment issue in the U.S.
Now, why don't more people know about this?
Except
those who listen to Expanding Awareness.
Yeah, and I have to thank you so much because you've been one of the few venues that's really given us an audience. But it's really taken place sort of undercover. The Massachusetts Department of Public Utilities passed a mandate for Massachusetts to have smart meters last year on December 23rd. It was about a year ago. It got no coverage in the press. And they have a pilot program that's taking place in Worcester, which was supposedly going to test whether or not this would be a good investment for the ratepayers, because it will cost us about over $7 billion to really put a computer on every home that's going to be continuously communicating. Also, it will give the utility companies the possibility to remotely control appliances as well. But the gas pipeline, opposition to the gas pipeline, has gotten a lot more attention. It's much more visceral, as you know, people are coming around surveying people's land to see if they can install a gas pipeline. What's happened in Massachusetts is they've started putting in the infrastructure without anybody knowing. The towns don't even know that, you know, there's things going up on the telephone poles that will help them to read the meters. It's been incredibly unseen assault.
Okay, so what happens biologically with these meters? I understand they pulse all the time, 24 hours a day. And it's microwave, right?
Yes.
And I understand that, you know, microwaves are safe because, your unit, your microwave oven, because it's a short duration that it doesn't collect. But this is different from constant microwave emissions. Am I right?
Well, also microwave ovens are shielded, and if the shield were broken on your microwave oven, then it would be a significant issue. And when the microwave ovens, they were first called radar ranges, were first beginning to be marketed, for example, Russia outlawed them, and because they did not feel that they were safe. And the Russians are really recognized around the world as being at the forefront of understanding the biological impacts of these frequencies. What's happening in the United States is, unless your core body temperature rises a certain amount, they're assuming that there's no impact. And so what they're basically saying is that that living organisms aren't electrical and that we're not having interference. But there are thousands of studies that demonstrate that these frequencies are interfering with, even at the very cellular level, the communication that takes place across the cell wall. But one of the most immediate things that happened to some people in California when the meter started to be installed, they instantly realized that they were in a sort of a simultaneous state of overcharge and exhaustion at the same time. And maybe the overcharge sort of comes a little bit first, so people don't realize, especially because we're a very competitive culture that stresses a lot of this sort of adrenaline, fight or flight competition. If you compare that to, for example, ancient China and ancient India, where they were doing a devotional practice and they were learning how to alchemize with the energy from the sun. And what we're doing is we're basically jamming our circuits by putting all of these frequencies out. So some people have this instant realization that they're getting very sick very fast, particularly if they have heart arrhythmias. But the interference with sleep, digestive ailments, all of the things that we associate with stress are basically indicating that the body's getting into a state of disharmony. And unfortunately, in the United States, the medical profession doesn't have the training or the recognition of this, and there's a very strong movement to try to classify it kind of as a mental illness, that people are just imagining that they're having these reactions to devices, and rather than giving them protection and shielding or providing safe areas where people can live, any kind of human rights protections, it would be treated by completely inappropriate protocols.
So. Right. How does one know that they have a smart meter?
Well, one of the challenges in Massachusetts has been that the term smart meter, when the utility company uses it, if you were to call NSTAR and ask them if you have a smart meter, they will say that you don't, because they're saying that a smart meter has two transmitters in it, and one talks back and forth to the utility company, and then the other transmitter talks to the microchipped appliances inside your home. So they will say that you don't have a smart meter. But if you ask if you have a radio frequency emitting meter, how often does it transmit and how often is it read, then you start to be able to, get more of an accurate idea of whether you're being exposed to these frequencies. And Massachusetts, within the last decade or so, changed out a lot of meters across the Commonwealth, and they told people that the meters would be read once a month when a truck drove through the neighborhood. But what happened is those meters were supposed to be asleep, gather the data, then turn on when the truck set out a signal, and then go back to sleep. What they did is they just turned the meters on all the time to transmit all the time instead of bothering, instead of turning them off and on. And healthcare providers and citizens in Massachusetts were never notified. So we're not a state that's going from analog, which is mechanical, no radiation, to smart meters. We're going from these automated meters to these newer generation AMI meters, where that's happening in the communities that are already doing it. And they're also in some areas being put in on new construction already. You can also look at the meter, and you can often see the radio transmitter, even if it looks like an old analog meter with dials and numbers. There'll be a little antenna inside, and then there should be a sticker on the meter that has an FCC ID number on it, but they're very often hidden on the underside of the meter inside the glass and very, very difficult to read. We've gone through all kinds of like gymnastics, climbing in people's bushes and things, trying to help them figure out what they have. They don't make it easy.
Now, what's the point? I mean, is it like the national security situation of spying on everybody? Is there a conspiracy here?
Well, there's definitely a certain group of people that's pointing to the issue of Agenda 21, which is a kind of a desire to set up different kinds of relationships with energy and housing and human habit fields. And on paper, some of these initiatives, particularly sustainability, that's how it's being justified to the public. What they're saying is instead of needing to build more infrastructure, that we can use the energy that we have more efficiently. And the way that they're going to do that is to surcharge us for using it during prime times to try to push our behavior, partly because we'll have to buy new appliances that have timers on them and that can be remotely controlled. So the utility company will start to control, to an extent, a lot of the activity that's going on in the house, either through sort of de facto control or through punitive pricing structures. So when the Massachusetts governors met, I'm sorry, the New England governors met behind closed doors to start to plan the smart meter deployment here, they were going to charge more from 7 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. So they're trying to push electric use because there's so much energy moving through the lines in the evening that's not being used and has to be continuously transported. The idea was that it would be free if it was done at night. Then some engineers at MIT did a study, and they basically said this would be very dangerous to the grid because what's going to happen is at 11 o'clock at night, everybody's going to turn on their dishwashers, or people are going to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do their laundry, you know, right before the rates go up, and it will make these peak periods. It'll just shift the peak periods. So then they tried to ease the times a little bit and say, well, you know, maybe it won't be extreme. Maybe we'll spread it out a little bit more. But, you know, the assumptions that they had in the beginning about how this was going to work, a lot of them have proved to be faulty, and it's constantly being adjusted as it goes.
All right. Tell us about your story. How did you come to be interested in this topic, and what has your experience have been?
Yeah, thank you so much. And, you know, I just wanted to clarify something, too. I do work with Citizens for Safe Technology in Canada. I'm just the Massachusetts sort of resource person. I don't coordinate for the whole country, but that's a group in Canada and the U.S. And what's happening, and I'll answer the question, is there are countries that have radio frequency limits that cater to the military. And Canada, the U.S., the U.K., Australia, and New Zealand are big players in that. And they are the countries that are producing a lot of the shoddy science and implying that there's no adverse health effects, whereas there are other countries where the limits are thousands of times lower than what we have here, including China, India, Austria, Italy. My experience was that I was starting to have a lot of health issues here in Massachusetts, where I was living. And I went through a couple of years where I was just sick continuously. And I realize now that I was already starting to react to the cell phone tower near my home and new infrastructure that was going in. But I didn't know that at the time. So I moved to Northern California, just really a leap of faith, hoping that the climate there would be really helpful for me and the access to organic food all year and things like that. And I didn't know that California was the first state that was deploying the smart meters through stimulus, economic stimulus funding. And I got really sick right away. And I tried to stay there for about 2 years. I moved 4 times, and I realized that I would probably die there if I stayed there. So I came back to Massachusetts basically with a prayer that I would try to, you know, heal here, not knowing, of course, that this was going to go on across the country after what I saw in California. But just astonishingly enough and stupefyingly enough, this is continuing. And I think the industry really doesn't know how to get itself out of it. I think that they know that there are, you know, major issues with this, and the wireless industry knows that there are issues with the ways in which we're using some of these technologies. And the other theory is that if they go ahead and deploy this whole thing and it's not safe and then they have to replace it, then they're planning obsolescence into their, you know, into their marketing plan. So they'll have another wave of income. And we're already, there's already sort of an alarm bell going off about this, because in Massachusetts, they tried to pass a bill that would override communities' abilities to regulate the placement of antennas. And the FCC has done the same thing. And I believe that they are going to start to decentralize some of this antenna infrastructure, because they realize that people living close to the cell phone towers and in the foothills of these antenna farms are becoming sick. And so rather than having a huge tower that has 18 antennas on it in one part of town, we're going to see antennas starting, you know, less powerful, but not necessarily less damaging, because it'll be closer to the home. And unless, you know, unless we have enough of an awareness starting to unfold that people begin to question the science that we're looking at here in the United States.
And how different is it from, Wi-Fi? I read an article in the Globe that some children are getting sick who have access to free Wi-Fi. How different is it from microwave radiation?
Well, Wi-Fi also uses microwave radiation. Wi-Fi is usually in the 2.4 gigahertz range, and then our cell phones are about 900, and then you have a smart meter that's doing both of those, although there's a kind of very strong suspicion that some of the utilities are also using the 700 range, which is even more biologically damaging. And one of the issues that parents don't understand is when kids are in school, you have industrial scale Wi-Fi there to blanket the whole building, to cover a very large geographic area. It's not the same as the Wi-Fi router that we have in our homes, because the signal is, you know, strong enough to be in a classroom to, you know, to power 30 computers. Like, I have a modem in my house. I'm hardwired, but I have the potential, I think, to plug in, I don't know how many, you know, computers it would be. And there's never going to be, you know, 30 computers going all day in this little room that I have. There are children becoming sick due to Wi-Fi in schools. And this is one of the areas that Citizens for Safe Technology is really working on. And also there's another group, Canadians for Safe Technology, which is Frank Clegg, the former director of Microsoft. And they just did a very significant sort of medical symposium there with a lot of experts. The problem with children is that they're, first of all, their, you know, their bones, their skulls are not as thick as adults. And they're going through these rapid levels of tissue differentiation and cell growth, especially through puberty. And we won't know for a couple of generations what the long-term effects are on fertility. But we already have studies showing that this exposure to RF really diminishes the quality of sperm in boys. It's a little harder to test girls, but you know, there's a very strong suspicion that it's going to be a major human rights violation. There are countries like Switzerland provides free Wi-Fi, but it's hardwired. And there are other countries that have already come up with significant warnings about what's happening in the schools. Israel did a survey to find out how many children had been removed from schools due to exposure to RF frequencies and, you know, was looking at the possibility of requiring all the schools to hardwire. And Israel already they don't have antennas in residential areas. People have hardwired phones in their homes because they don't want to be exposing people 24/7. And there are other, you know, sort of, it starts usually with a small community rather than the whole country, but in France and in Germany, there are communities, Austria also in the schools, they do not have wireless. It's cheaper for the utility, you know, for the companies to throw up a wireless transmitter than it is to hardwire everybody, but they're not putting in the cost of the adverse health effects.
Yeah, and is there a way to protect oneself from these rays? Can we blanket our house with aluminum foil, for instance?
Yeah, you know, there's a very large industry in shielding from radio frequencies, and some of it seems to be not effective because the problem is that if you shield your house but any radiation gets in, then it just bounces around all over the place. So I'm not a big proponent of shielding as a long-range solution, but I certainly understand why people end up doing it in the short run in order to protect themselves. But there are curtains now that people use, and when I was living up in Gloucester, I had something coming across the water to my cottage that was just unbearable, and I had to put curtains up on half the windows.
What sort of curtains?
They have a sort of a copper filament in them, and it's sort of almost like a screen built into the curtains that it doesn't allow the radiation to come through. And there are a couple of different organizations. One is called Less EMF. It's based out of Albany, New York. And I think Albany. And they, you know, you hang up the curtain and it'll stop the radio frequency from coming in. And then what a lot of people are starting to do is sleep within a canopy so that they're protected at night. Because one of the theories is that the damage is really occurring at night when people are sleeping. There's a difference, you know, in our biology when we're alert and awake versus when we're in the state of rest and digest. It's the autonomic nervous system. It's the balance between the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. So many people have found that they're able to keep their symptoms at bay if they can just sleep in a clean environment. But we have experiments showing people growing plants, for example, in a Faraday cage, and they don't grow as well because it eliminates your access to some of the good frequencies that we want to have, you know, enveloping us and nurturing us. And that's really the true source of energy on this planet is the sun. So if we do sustainability efforts to become more literate with that and to, you know, work more to have health because we're evolving with the planet, that's very different from trying to jam all the circuits of the energy that is coming from the sun.
Okay. You alluded earlier in passing about fires.
Yes, and this is a big controversy right now. There have been fires in a number of areas where the meters have been installed, and there are different companies manufacturing them as well.
And what would cause the fire?
Well, the new meters are made of plastic. They're electronic devices. And one thing that we know is if we have a big electronic pulse, either from a hacker or from the sun as a natural occurrence, it will fry the electronics in these devices. We know that for sure. And the legislature, the U.S. Congress, I think, or House, just passed some kind of big budget item to have more money to protect the grid from these kinds of situations because they know that it's completely vulnerable. The old analog meters were glass and metal, and we know of no fire that was ever associated for decades decades with that kind of meter. But these meters, water can leak in or moisture and cause a short circuit. There's one theory that in the areas where they're turning the meters off and on, that's one of the reasons why there's a fire hazard, because if somebody doesn't pay their electricity bill, now they can shut the meter off from the office in Waltham, and then they have to turn it back on again remotely when a person pays their bill. It's illegal in Massachusetts to do that. We have rules, consumer protection rules, where they have to go and notify the person and try to find out why and work out a payment plan. But not all states have those protections. And in Maine, it was one of them. And the meters sort of melt, and then the house catches fire. And there was a woman right on the California border in New Mexico, who died in a house fire that was caused by a smart meter. There was also another gentleman in California, Vacaville, who died in a house fire after smart meter installation. But we have this situation happening right now where the science that we're getting and the studies is extremely corrupt. And Underwriters Laboratory just started to test the smart meters. These meters were installed on people's houses without being tested by Underwriters Laboratory, which is supposed to be independent. However, Underwriters Laboratory is stating that the meters aren't causing the fires. This is very troublesome. But Underwriters Laboratory also said that Tower 7 collapsed due to office fires. There's a whistleblower from Underwriters Laboratory named Kevin Ryan, who has, basically sort of come out with a lot of information about how the science, even from Underwriters Laboratory, is being bought by the industries involved. So it doesn't give us any assurance. One of the issues is that there is all different kinds of aging of housing stock, and there can be vulnerabilities in the home wiring system that can't handle this radiation traveling over the lines or these harmonics that are caused by the smart meters. It's called dirty electricity. And so, it would have been a very reasonable, proactive sort of safety preventative kind of thing to make sure that the house was able to handle the smart meters. And that's one of the next, I think, things that we're going to see. They're going to start doing code enforcement and forcing landlords to update the wiring on the houses. And if we had spent the stimulus funding on that instead of on these meters for surveillance, it would have been much more reasonable, but it's going to be a real financial hardship for some homeowners when they're going to be required to upgrade to accommodate this system, which is totally unnecessary and not doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Okay, I want to remind you that you're listening to Expanding Awareness. And this is Victor Robert Venskus, and with us online is Patricia Burke, and she is a Mass Coordinator for the Citizens for Safe Technology. Where can people go for the best information regarding the effects of smart meters on biological systems like humans?
Oh, that's a really good question. There are two excellent videos on YouTube by a woman named Dr. Erica Mallory Blythe, and she's speaking to the one of the groups in I think it's a British Medical Society. But
excuse me, how do you spell that last name, Erica?
I think it's
Mallory.
B-L-Y-T-H-E. And I'm just going to double check and see if I spell her name right. So Dr. Erica Mallory Blythe, it's B-L-Y-T-H-E. And she's speaking on electromagnetic radiation health on children in 2014. And she's founded a physician's initiative to work on this issue too. But she's got two outstanding videos. One is a presentation she's doing to healthcare providers, and then another one is to a more general audience. And she's summarizing all of the different issues. There's a report called the Bioinitiative Report, and that is also available online. And this is a group of physicians and scientists internationally who reviewed all of the data that was showing evidence of harm, because there's so much science that's being manufactured right now by the industry. And it's broken down into chapters, and they talk about the link with autism, with reproductive issues, with the breaching the blood-brain barrier. And, you know, it's a really comprehensive report.
And what can you say about the blood-brain barrier if you're knowledgeable on that count?
Well, the idea is that we have this very strong protection from nature, which is the blood-brain barrier, so certain things don't penetrate. You know, substances that would be circulating throughout our body are not able to reach the brain because of the functioning of this blood-brain barrier. And what they're finding in the research is that the radio frequency begins to, allows materials to breach the blood-brain barrier. So, sorry, someone's just trying to call in. It should stop in a moment. This is extremely significant. So, what I think, one of the things that I perceive happens to me when I feel myself being affected by a lot of radio frequency, is the cerebrospinal fluid that's supposed to flow up and over the top of the head to cool and lubricate and cushion the brain. It doesn't work properly. I think the body kind of goes into a little bit of a reaction that might be similar to protection from a lightning strike, and it can actually tighten the bony plates on the skull a little bit. And then what happens is the brain isn't lubricated properly, it's not being taken care of temperature-wise, it's not cushioned properly. And what we've been doing in the U.S. is our science has been looking at, you know, things like autism and Alzheimer's, like really at the cellular level. And what we have to do is back away and look at how we're interfering with the body's natural defenses. And that's where the blood-brain barrier starts to get really interesting. It's not just the semen, it's the fluid that the semen flows in. It's whether that's resilient enough. And then it's a question of the aura or the electromagnetic field. And Western medicine hasn't even looked at that yet. But if we were to question whether the way we're using wireless technologies is collapsing people's auras and, affecting what the Ayurveda called the ojos, which is it gives you your vitality and your shine and your health. It's what, when someone looks youthful, they're lubricated. And what we're doing is we're basically wrecking the lubrication, including the blood-brain barrier.
I tripped over some collapsed doors on my way over here today. Okay, Patricia. Now, is this injury, let's call it, permanent?
Well, that's another good question, too. I think when people are able to get away from the exposure to microwave radio frequencies and their system can reset itself, I think that there's a very good prognosis, even if they've crossed the line into disease, because there is a sense that this is a precursor to increased long-term risk for cancer. And I think it's pretty obvious to me, particularly leukemia and some of the other cancers. And then, of course, brain tumors if you're holding a phone up to your head. When I first moved back from California, I believe I really would have died if I'd stayed there. And I was red like a lobster. I went through a period of time, I had so much increased copper and inflammatory markers in my blood and in my body. And I went to live in Gloucester, and I walked near the ocean a lot, and I avoided radio frequencies, and I really healed and kind of turned the corner. But I can't go out like a normal person and be around cell phone towers and radio frequencies and things, and I don't think I ever will be, and I don't want to. I don't think our world is supposed to be looking like this. I'll tell you a little story. I was Christmas shopping yesterday, and I was in Barnes & Noble's, and the clerk there the young guy, and his nose was running like a faucet, and he was very blotchy. And when I was looking at him, I knew that this was the same thing that I saw all over California, because I think his aura went so deep inside because it couldn't deal with all the different frequencies. And he might have been under the Wi-Fi router for the store. He was using a cash register all day. He was probably standing in shoes that didn't let him ground and discharge. And he probably had a cell phone in his pocket. And, you know, when his nose started running, it's because his aura was collapsed, and he wasn't appropriately insulated from the environment. And this is what they saw in Sweden in 1984 when they founded the first group for people who are electromagnetically hypersensitive. And I knew looking at that guy that, you know, he's going to be extremely, extremely sick and probably disabled within a very short period of time. And he's in his early 20s because he's had this extreme exposure and really his body is totally overwhelmed and doesn't know how to deal with these unnatural frequencies. And what happened in Sweden is people went to the dermatologist first for treatment because they had these skin rashes. But the problem is that they lost their aura. And I was at another store the other day, and the guy at the cash register also, it was cold out, but he had a fan on his register blowing on his face because he was so overheated. And he, you know, was full of heat shock proteins and other stress indicators. And I think we are going to have an incredible reckoning, because right now we're trying to attribute a lot of these issues to chemicals. And we're like a paradigm behind. We're not testing the radio frequencies. We're trying to blame things like autism and asthma rates and things like that on the coal model so that we can justify the investment in all of this new wireless infrastructure.
Yeah, pollution is...
Yeah. Pollution is an issue. There's no question. But we have this presumption of innocence to these wireless frequencies. And I think the international community as a whole knows that the U.S. and these other military-based economies are really barking up the wrong tree.
Okay. Now, is it too late? Okay. We heard from electromagnetic radiation coming from power lines, and it's too costly to bury them under the earth. Now, what about now with Wi-Fi, with wireless? Is it too late to adopt another system or go back to an older one?
No, it's not at all. And, you know, we have this incredible portal right now with the new moon coinciding with the winter solstice. And that doesn't happen every year, but I think it's sort of a cosmic reset. And we've already seen other countries, for example, in India, they aligned their they lowered their limits to one-tenth of what they were. They took down cell phone towers. They did a lot of, new things. I'm not saying, and I know there's a change now with a new person in India, so things are a little bit rocky there right now. But other countries have already started to do course corrections. But I think in the United States, it's not going to come from the top down. It has to come from the bottom up. And I think people, there's a profound invitation to reframe the question. Instead of asking, how do I protect myself from damage from my cell phone by texting and by turning it off at night, it's starting to care for the whole sphere of influence, which is, are the people safe who live under the towers? And, you know, what can I do to begin, if I'm going to be a consumer of this product, what can I do to try to ensure, you know, that it's being done safely? And I think there's going to be a backlash against the United States as well, because after September 11th, the U.S. reorganized its overseas military presence to have smaller bases in more countries. They made those countries increase their radio frequency exposure levels so that their radar and their surveillance and their weapons would work in those host countries. And I see if the United States can't clean up its own act that there's going to be international repercussions, because we've lied about the safety of the levels that we're using in the juxtapositions and concentrations that we're using. But I think if people, there's so many opportunities to begin to shift your behavior in ways that will make an enormous difference. And, we don't need to be wireless in places where we could easily be hardwired. And that's just a really basic recommendation for people. When you're working all day in your office and you're at a phone, you don't need your cell phone on all day. There are a lot of different ways that we could be doing it. And Russia has already developed a Wi-Fi technology that's based on light. And there are already some U.S. businesses that have purchased it. Other science is sort of leaps and bounds ahead of us because they are trying to figure out how to do it safely. But you also asked about burying the power lines, and I think the paradigm is going to shift again very quickly, where we're going to have more zero energy houses. We're getting much more sophisticated at solar and storage. What the United States has been trying to do is to figure out how the industry can store the energy and then dole it out to us, instead of having the energy stored in the house itself, which is what Germany is doing. Bosch has a technology where, the solar is produced during the day, but then it's kept in your house for you to use in the evening. The baseline generation model is going to go away. We're going to end up with microgrids, which are smaller, locally produced, not transported long distances, and there's going to be a lot less of the power lines. And rather than letting them continue to try to hold up this 100-year paradigm that's dying, it's in its death throes, we really have to have the precaution now, rather than finding out after the fact that we believed that this industry, was doing things that were safe. And the most indicting legislation that we have in the United States is the Telecommunications Act of 1996, because it prohibits communities from blocking wireless infrastructure due to environmental reasons. And that got extended to include health. So when you have an industry that has that kind of protection, and then we're passing all these regulations to protect them from liability, we have to start looking at really overthrowing that law, passing much more stringent regulations. Also, the other thing we need to do is we have to have hearings where people are lying under oath, instead of having somebody just go to the zoning board and lie through their teeth who's a career tobacco scientist, which is what's happening in Massachusetts, also with the Department of Public Utilities. There has to be consequences for the people who have misdirected all of the resources.
Yeah, but people can still lie under oath.
Pardon me?
People can still lie under oath.
Yeah, but if there are consequences, it's a little bit different legal process.
Yeah.
To start to set it up so that you have the ability to, to pursue, rather than having a law on the books that says you can't have environmental complaints against having a tower, in a sensitive area.
Okay, you mentioned that person who was electromagnetic sensitive in the working environment. Does this imply that there are folks who are immune?
There are many people who believe that we are all susceptible to electromagnetics over time, and that there are people whose individual constitution makes them sensitive in a more pronounced way earlier on in the process. And there are a couple theories with that, and one is that there's something called the microwave auditory effect, where when we hear a sound, it's actually inside our head. It's actually vibrating inside our head. And some people have a much more distinct ability to hear. Tinnitus is one of the symptoms. But what happens is all the symptoms are very different. So very few people would know that their sperm quality is being impaired until they have fertility issues. So a lot of the damage that's happening could be happening is not something that people would easily see. But when we have autism rates doubling every 5 years, one of the issues that we have to look at is sort of the long-term impact for seven generations. So it's not just the question of, am I okay smoking cigarettes? It's like, what's happening to everybody around me because I'm smoking cigarettes? Some people don't get cancer or lung cancer, but they might die of something else. You know, so there, when you try to just do a direct relationship between one stress factor and everybody, the masses, you get the shoddy science for this question or any other question, because we're ignoring kind of the individual constitution. People who have a very strong, resilient aura, who've never had any kind of injury to any bone, for example, who've never had any kind of a vulnerability with their digestion, may still be in a state of overcharge because their aura is constantly having to repel those frequencies. And that's not what it's supposed to be doing round the clock. That's not how our biology was designed. But the other question is, are we going to have any food? Because if we're destroying the habitat for the pollinators, particularly the bees, as we, you know, dominate more and more of the area with this ubiquitous frequencies, then, you know, anybody can starve to death.
Yeah, that's something we have. I had in mind to ask you about animals and pets. What do we see there?
Well, we know that the age of the lifespan for pets has been decreasing, and
really?
The holistic vets have been on top of this, but they have been looking at the quality of the food and the vaccination rate. That's where they've really focused their two efforts, and I've tried to reach out to them a little bit to see, you know, in terms of pets at home, especially somebody's gone all day and there's still Wi-Fi on in the house, you know, whether that's affecting pets. And I think this is one of the areas that could really drive a paradigm shift, because people care a great deal about their pets. But a lot of animals have fur, and they have oil on them in that fur, and they have a little bit different insulation, whereas, you know, the Indian culture, the Ayurvedic culture, they mapped out these 72,000 nadis on the human skin, these electrical points that all have different kinds of qualities. And the Chinese, you know, recognize the meridians, this underground river of energy. Our dogs and cats have the meridians as well, but they have another layer of protection that we don't have. So, you know, what happens with humans, too, they have eyeglasses, they have metal in their teeth, they're wearing metal in their zippers, people are piercing in places that make them even more vulnerable to radio frequency, and, you know, most dogs and cats, like, don't have their ears pierced, so there is a little bit of difference, but I think it's a very good question that you asked, because I think we need research that's going to start to look into that.
Yeah, I met some punk dogs.
Maybe there are people that pierce their pets' dogs. I know some people dye their pets' hair, too. So,
all right. Talk to us more about maybe even how to get involved with citizens for safe technology.
Yeah, I think if people can start to subscribe to a couple of the different news feeds, there are three that are very, very good, that because one of the things that's fascinating is to watch what's happening in other states, because they're a little bit ahead of us, and you can hear from, you know, U.S. residents who are saying, this is what happened after the smart meter was installed in my house. So there's three different ones that I can mention right away. One is called The Truth About Smart Grids, and that is an excellent, excellent website, and lots of information. And if you sign up to be on his contact list, he'll let you know when he posts a new article. Very, very well researched. He has, I think, a physics background himself. And, you know, he's one of the major disseminators of information, very, very well written. And he did a very significant study on the privacy issues, which we haven't touched on as much, but, you know, the invasion of privacy from the smart meters and how this data is being used. It's being handed over, you know, to government agencies, things like that. And it can also be sold, is another issue. But that's one. Another one is called Stop Smart Meters. And this was one of the first groups that came out of Massachusetts. And he's very much about engaged activism, locking your meter so it can't be replaced. They sell a meter that you can use to measure meters. I think every library should have, you know, RF measuring devices that can be lent out. The library in the town next to me has one so that people can take it to their house and scan their living area and find out what's coming in through the windows. So that's a good one, Stop Smart Meters. And then the EMF Safety Network, which is based out of Sebastopol, and these were like the, you know, the grandmother of the radio frequency smart meter opposition movements that really were on board right from the very beginning, because they're like the outer, you know, a school of fish. The outside members are always more vulnerable to attack, and California was the first area where the smart meters were installed. So, and they have a lot of links there to other, you know, other sources, and they have a list of all the different state organizations too. So if you have people from other states, we don't have as strong of a web presence, but we do have four groups in Massachusetts. One is Stop Smart Meters Massachusetts. One is haltmasmartmeters.org, which has a lot of information about the Worcester pilot debacle. Then there's a group in Sheffield called No Mass Smart Meters, and there's another group in Worcester that has a Facebook page. I think it's called Stop National Grid Smart Meters. And I'm sure there are other people too. There are a number of Tea Party groups that have been very actively hosting you know, talks about it. They're more, you know, concerned about the privacy and the hacking, I think, than the health. But we'll work with anybody.
Well, sure. Okay. As we did maybe short shift the privacy matters, I understand also that even new appliances will have a chip in it. Talk to us about that aspect.
Yeah, a lot of the appliances are already being chipped, and people have not been informed about that either. So, the chip is to enable the utility company to control consumption eventually. What the consumers are being told is you'll be able to save money. They're not telling you how you're going to be able to save money, but the chipped appliances are communicating continuously with the smart meter to, you know, indicate whether they're on or off, or whether the utility company thinks it's a good time to run your dishwasher or your air conditioner. And what's happening, for example, in Italy, they have all the information in the house. So the homeowner knows what's generating a lot of electricity, and they can voluntarily change their behavior to do it later on at night or whatever if they have a huge heat wave or something like that. Of course, they don't use air conditioners the way we do here, but they're not collecting the data and storing it. There's a firewall. The information is the homeowner's. It's their private information. And this is the way that a lot of the countries that are more sensitive to state abuse of power are working with this new idea of shifting the time that people are using things. And we here in the U.S. just haven't been given the accurate information about what the smart meters even involve, if we've even gotten any information at all. And a lot of times it's been given just basically false information. So they'll say the meter only transmits 6 times a day, and then we put a meter up against it, and it's transmitting every couple seconds. So it's a very distinct profile of what's going on inside the home. And that just is not necessary.
Talk to us a little more about how one's biological field or aura may be affected, and what kind of conditions can result from overexposure?
Well, I think basically a person's aura can get a hole in it. It can collapse on one side. It can have a tear. It can be like Swiss cheese and have tons of holes in it. And I think a lot of the illnesses, autoimmune things that we've seen where people are really suffering, like chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, are really the first line of defense is that the aura is not able to sustain itself. And I think a lot of it is going to be tied in eventually to our electric, you know, the issues that we have with electricity. But when you sleep with a smart meter on one side of you all night long, I think what happens is the aura just collapses and comes in close to the body. And I think that the aura has these abilities to protect against things that it would find in nature, like a potential lightning strike. But it doesn't know how to really work with these other frequencies. And so when the aura kind of collapses like that, it's like you have a poorly insulated wire. And I think the people who have this electromagnetic hypersensitivity, they're basically experiencing the world as if they are an uninsulated wire. And there are energy exercises and yoga practices and things that people can do and have done throughout millennia to maintain their aura, but they were doing it so that the aura would be in communication with the universal energy field. They weren't doing it to be at war with the outer environment. So any of the neurological issues, I think all these autism, ADD, MS, all of those kinds of things with the nervous system and hormone imbalances, I think are really rooted in a loss of the integrity of the aura. And it's like the Earth's ozone layer, not being resilient or having a hole in it. It's very similar. The sun's energy is supposed to be filtered through the planets, you know, protective, and then it's supposed to be filtered through our own protective field. And if we set our sights to enabling everybody to have a resiliency in their aura, we'd have a completely different world. And it doesn't mean maybe that we wouldn't still be able to have some wireless capability that would be based in light, but we wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now.
Do you know anything more about Russia and the use of light at all?
You know what I can do if you want is I could put it on the Stop Smart Meters Massachusetts website so that people could grab, grab the link to the article that explains it.
All right.
But the Russian scientists are appealing to the world community to, you know, to tell them that the RF limits are very, very damaging. And what the U.S. has said is that the Russians want the military advantage, and they don't want to be limited by what Russia's saying. So there's a real philosophical disagreement.
And you've been on the program before, and I posed this question to you previously. Now, the utility workers are also being exposed to these electromagnetic waves and having ill effects. How is it that they keep going with this technology?
Well, the industry doesn't have a good reputation for protecting its workers, I have to say, overall.
All right.
But when they're installing the meters, they wear protective glass, they have on insulated gloves, and they're working during the day. And again, it becomes that issue of the damage occurring at night. But there are large numbers of utility workers. I've even talked to a couple of them who I think are already on the electromagnetically hypersensitive continuum. But occupational studies would be a good way to start to look at this if we could get honest data. One of the problems is that there are so many cofactors that could be blamed for that kind of an issue. And again, we're trying to blame the chemicals, but that is a really good question. So, and the smart meters are new. We only started them in 2009, and the gestation for cancer is usually 10 years. So a lot of people believe we're just on the front of a tsunami.
Oh, boy.
EMF-related issues.
Yeah, so obviously this does indicate that the utility owners and companies do know there's something to be protected from.
Yeah, they do.
All right. Now, that's an interesting question. Are other things affected? Food, water?
Yeah. I mean, if you put something in the microwave, the rate at which it cooks is related to how much fat and how much water. And that's one of the reasons why many people feel that the breast cancer epidemic is tied into the radio frequencies and that women are more vulnerable because we have a higher percentage of body fat. So, yeah, there's definitely a question in terms of the impact that we're having on trees, you know, on other biological life. I see a lot of trees that are half dead. I'll see a line of trees at the end of somebody's driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that it's not dying because of salt on the road or something. And I believe that you could probably see the line of energy coming off the smart meter going through that tree. And the person replaces it and the landscape company pays the damages, but it's really the radio frequencies. If we could see this stuff, it would be unbelievable what we would see.
Are there maybe clairvoyants who actually can?
Yeah, well, Donna Eden is a medical, there are medical intuitives who can see energy. And I think these systems that came to us from China and India, a lot of them were informed by people who had the capability to perceive energy in ways that we can't. So, and then there's the Carillion, I think it is, the photography where they can show people's auras.
Yeah, Carillion photography, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And there are also meters, like gauge meters, that you can actually measure the amount of electromagnetic waves. And are there meters for microwaves?
Yes, professional-grade meters, and most of them are coming from Germany. And this is one of the ways that a lot of activists have been empowered. They've bought the meters, and then they're able to prove that the utilities have been lying about the transmissions. There's one by Gigahertz Solutions. It costs about $500. I own that one, and I've gone to a lot of people's homes with it, but I'm having a problem because it's not measuring the frequency that is currently in the area where I'm living. You have to know what frequency is being emitted, and then you have to get the meter that measures in that range. So it is a little bit tricky. But there's a place online right now called the EMF Help Center with Jerry Day, and they're selling a set of meters that they think is one of the best sort of toolboxes to evaluate your environment. And they also have a body voltage meter, which can show you if you're picking up voltage from something artificial. It's one of the four meters that they sell. So they're really trying to help consumers, you know, be able to figure out what's going on in their living spaces. So, yeah, the meters are really, really helpful. And, you know, as I said, I wish every library had them. There's also Cornet, and Stop Smart Meters sells the Cornet meter as part of their, you know, keeping their business going. There's a lot of information on their website about it, and that measures the frequencies, too.
Cornet, C-O-R-N-E-T,
yeah. And you have to kind of learn how to use it. I like the gigahertz one because you can just hear the frequencies as you point in different directions. It's auditory, and it's just easier for me to deal with. But
no, like a Geiger counter machine or something.
Yeah, yeah. Gauss meter is for magnetic fields. And again, we have much higher limits here than other countries for magnetic fields as well. Then what people also buy is a meter that you plug into your wiring to see if you have transients coming through your home, you know, through your house, because these currents ride on the electric wires inside homes and on the copper plumbing piping, too.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to remind you that you're listening to Expanding Awareness, and this is Victor Robert Venskus, and my guest for this morning is Patricia Burke, and she is the Mass Coordinator for Citizens for Safe Technology. And is there any literature, any books regarding this topic of the dangers of Wi-Fi and electric meters?
And they're new, too. Martin Blank just put out a book called Overpowered, and he's really, really wonderful. And then there's the Rudolf Steiner Foundation just published a book called An Electronic Silent Spring, by Katie Singer, and that book is really, you know, very good on the health effects and things. And then there's an author named Blake Levitt, who's from Connecticut. She's a science writer, and she's written two books, I think. She did one on the cell phone towers and then another one on EMF, and it's got a long name, I'm sorry, but if you look up B. Blake Levitt, you'd be able to see it. And that gives a lot of more of the scientific background about, and also legislative, too. They're both fascinating.
Okay. And tell us about yourself now. You've had this big exposure. How are you doing now?
I'm doing better than I was when I was in California with the smart meters, but I still am definitely needing to do a lot of vigilance to protect myself. I perceive I'm living in NSTAR territory, and two of the big utilities that are working on the smart meters are National Grid and NSTAR. And NSTAR actually came out against the smart meters, not because they're against all of the objectives, but because they're using some other kind of technology. And I can hear and feel this frequency come off and on during the night and day, and I know that there are other people. People call me, you know, all the time, describing what's happening to them. And so I do acupuncture and chiropractic care, you know, religiously, and with practitioners who believe in electromagnetic hypersensitivity. I haven't had good luck with the Western medicine model. They really kind of diminish it and ridicule it. I've had some really just very painful experiences trying to talk to somebody who I'm paying for health care, and then I'm, you know, trying to teach them or give them information about it, and they're very dismissive. And I know a lot of, you know, people who've had health issues have had that experience with chronic fatigue and Lyme and things like that. So I know I'm sort of, you know, pushing the paradigm shift, and I have tremendous support from activists in other parts of the country and other people in Massachusetts, and that just makes it all, you know, worthwhile. But I, you know, diet, I've done a lot of different, you know, interventions to try to really keep myself as strong as I possibly can. But I don't know what the long-term situation is for me. I don't think I can live a long, healthy life in this kind of environment. I don't expect to. I do feel like it's a death sentence.
Oh, my. Okay, now, do we write our congressmen and women?
You know, we would love to see the oversight committee, the joint oversight committee, do an investigation into the Department of Public Utilities smart meter mandate. And we're working on a new petition right now. We had a petition online to Martha Coakley, but because of the move on regulations, we can't change the destination of the petition, and we didn't get anywhere with her during the election. But I think it would be remarkable if the incoming, you know, administration would review the assumptions and the process that the Department of Public Utilities used to promote smart meters and really examine with a fine-tooth comb. Because if somebody just lifts the cover a little bit, they're going to be horrified at what they see.
What is the move on resolution?
Well, the move on, we were asking for an investigation into the Worcester pilot program because we felt that if they examined the Worcester pilot program, they wouldn't go ahead with the smart meter mandate. But unfortunately, the Department of Public Utilities has already mandated the smart meters, even though the Worcester pilot program hasn't even started yet. It's been delayed for, I think, 2 years because of citizen opposition.
And why are the citizens opposed to this?
Well, I think they've gotten really well informed about the health, security, cost impacts, but the biggest issue was they tried to install microwave antennas in residential areas. And, you know, it was just completely outrageous. And they ended up putting an antenna 200 feet from a magnet school. But they really went into Worcester for what we call decision-based evidence-making. They weren't there to study the smart meters. They were there to justify the smart meters. So we paid $48 million for this pilot program, and it has been so lacking in integrity. And then the DPU said, oh, we're not going to wait for the pilot program to finish. We want to do smart meters as the cornerstone to grid modernization anyways. So why we're paying for this program still, you know, when they're not even going to wait for the results is another question.
And I guess we covered it a little bit, but how do the utility companies benefit from smart meters?
Well, I think they're changing their business model so that they can be purveyors of data and information. But, you know, it allows them to pass along the cost of this with a guaranteed rate of return on investment. So it's their next wave of economic growth. Whether it's taking us where we want to go or not is kind of irrelevant. But, you know, I think that and it is, you know, what they're saying is they haven't updated their model for 100 years. So they're trying to have more information. They're saying that they'll be able to improve outages faster, that they'll have, you know, more ability to remotely turn off when people don't pay their bills, so they won't have to send out a truck, so it will save for fossil fuel. So there's a huge cost piece for them, but they're not factoring in the health and environmental costs. And if they were, it would bury the whole program.
All right. Now, we mentioned the chips inside of new appliances. Can someone know where the chips are and destroy them?
Well, they're usually pretty difficult to get to, but it deactivates the a warranty on the appliance if you do that. Yeah. So
they have a way around everything.
And depending on, you know, how significant their code enforcement is, and, you know, whether how much of a police state we continue to move towards on this. I hate to use those kind of inflammatory words, but I think that it's the reality of this level of control that's being presented as a contrived freedom. But, you know, they would know when your transmitter isn't going on, and then, you know, they would come to your house and, you know, start to whether they could press charges or whatever. It just depends on where the regulations go, and so far it's been extremely worrisome.
Okay, what if somebody does refuse to have a smart meter and they contact their utilities? Can that one have them removed?
Well, what happened in Massachusetts is the Department of Public Utilities told the investor-owned utilities to file opt-out fees. So you would get charged, you know, it could be $75 a month. It could be $15 a month not to have a smart meter. But the problem is your next door neighbor's meter could be right outside your bedroom window. So if you have a health issue, you're paying protection money and you're not even getting protected. And then there's a huge issue with people living in, you know, co-housing or any kind of apartment building or anything like that, because you can't really protect yourself if everybody in the building is not willing to pay that opt-out fee. And what they are thinking is that eventually they're going to have full compliance. They see this opposition as just a temporary issue, and they're doing the opt-out for political expediency. And you also see politicians saying, well, I'd support the opt-out if, you know, we do smart meters. Well, it really doesn't address the issue. And it's just, it shows kind of a lack of understanding and a lack of belief in the human rights issue and the health issue from the radio frequency.
And how do you see the Citizens for Safe Technology growing? And, you know, can I sign up? What do I do?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you visit the website, I think, I should look and see if they do have a mailing list. But they have action items for smart meters, for cell phone towers. They have a number of different issues. They have a whole bunch of information about, you know, wildlife. And, you know, for me, I think what's most satisfying is whatever you love most, whether it's pets or your garden or whatever, if you start to look at that issue from the issue of the wireless radio frequency, you start to have a sphere of influence that's meaningful to you. I think in Massachusetts, we have to find a legislator who will sponsor a bill both for an investigation and for consumer protections, and it has to address the opt-out much more significantly. But I think in Massachusetts also, there are 40 independent municipal-owned utilities, and in those communities, people can become active and try to prevent those communities from going with the smart meters. For example, we went to Hudson and talked to the Republican committee there and a couple of other groups, and they were all in agreement that they should not do smart meters in Hudson. These are small towns with real people working in the power and light departments. And if you can get to them before the propaganda machine gets to them, that would be great. And there are some really good movies right now. One is called Microwave Science and Lies, and you can watch it on Vimeo and, you know, have some of your neighbors in to look at it with you. It's really, I think this issue represents the paradigm shift of, you know, from the bottom up and citizens restoring their relationship with nature and with their own power and authority. And it's actually, it's very beautiful. And I wish for everyone to find a way to plug into their heart and then become part of it, because it is so empowering when you realize the opportunity that we have right now to change the history of the world.
Well, okay. And are you willing to take calls from the public here if they have questions for you, or send you an email?
Oh, sure. Yeah, every time I've been on the show, people have contacted us.
Okay.
So I have to really thank you for that.
Well, thank you for thanking me. All right, what is your contact number? Or email?
Yeah, I'm just going to give my regular email address.
It's sure.
It's Patricia999Burke, B-U-R-K-E, @gmail.com. And that's probably the best way to get me.
Okay, and if you missed that, you could always contact me at expandingawareness@yahoo.com.
Yeah, and if people send me their phone number, I'll call them back.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. All right. Anything more you want to say in passing regarding the effects of electromagnetic waves and microwaves on us biological entities?
Yeah. Well, I guess, again, with this juxtaposition of the solstice and the new moon, I think a lot of people have been looking for sort of this paradigm shift away from patriarchal and this kind of thing. And I think if Americans can realize the extent to which these consumer devices are tied into technology that was developed for warfare and start to develop some scrutiny and not be fearful that we won't be able to have it, but to ask the question of whether we can be doing it in safer, more reasonable ways. And, you know, the freedom to connect, really, our freedom, our birthright is to connect to the universal energy field. And if we're doing things that interfere with that, then we're on the wrong track. And I think we're getting ready to jump train tracks here.
What can you say about that it was developed for warfare?
During the war, they developed the ability to be able to see planes coming over the horizon by using this radiation. And we have a paper that was published, I think, in 1966, and it basically says flat out that if the United States starts to have stronger exposure limits, that it will have an adverse effect on military and industrial output. And that's what we've prioritized here in the United States. If you look at Austria or Italy, which was the site of the Vatican leukemia lawsuit, they're protecting the health of their citizens while still having progress, you know. And the United States economy is just going to get buried if, we're not producing products that are safe, whether it's GMO foods or anything else. We're doing it to ourselves.
So, yeah, I saw an article in MIT Review. It says, buy fresh, buy GMO. It almost sounded like a joke, but it really wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Massachusetts is so interesting because we have so many educational institutes here, but we have a lot of funding from the military-industrial complex. And I would encourage people to look way beyond the boundaries of what you're seeing in the mainstream media and from the United States regulatory authorities, because most of them are in a state of regulatory capture, especially the Environmental Defense Fund and the Natural Resources Defense Council, completely lacking in integrity on information on these issues.
Yeah, and the EPA came out by saying that the ash from coal is okay when it has arsenic and other nasties in it, you know, so we can't even trust the EPA these days.
Yeah, these agencies that had tremendous integrity 30 years ago are really in trouble right now. And, you know, I mean, we have this industry that has access to every single phone call and every email that any individual has ever sent. And I don't think we have any idea how much of policy right now is running on blackmail and bribery in this country. It's really below our level of awareness. We think that other countries have these corrupt situations going on, and you know, it's just so difficult to understand why there are so many people and agencies and things that have stepped out of integrity.
Yeah. Okay. One more time. Any websites, clearinghouses, and maybe you should mention these books again. Regarding electromagnetic waves.
Yeah, some of the recent ones that have gotten a lot of press, one is called Overpowered, and Martin Blank, I believe, was a professor at Columbia University.
And I like that title a lot.
yeah. There's a bunch of them, but that one is fairly recent, and you probably can even see him speaking about it a little bit on YouTube if you look. I bet he's got some talks there. And then the one that was published by the Rudolf Steiner Foundation is called An Electronic Silent Spring. So it's sort of mirroring Rachel Carson's
yes.
Silent Spring Warning on the DDT, and that's by Katie Singer. And those two are probably the most recent ones that have come out. And they probably have other ones that are, you know, you could jump to from their websites as well. I bet they give other references. And then there's a lot of, you know, when you start searching, there's a website called The Wired Child. There are a number of different groups that have come out. Once you start looking, you will find all kinds of information. And just being willing to ask the question is a great gift to the planet right now for anybody.
Okay, thank you so much for expanding our awareness regarding the effects of microwave radiation and electromagnetic waves. And thank you once again for being on board here.
Thank you.
Okay, and enjoy the holidays and enjoy your dreams.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Okay, you are tuned to 90.3 WCBC in Newton.